What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Progressive Gentleman Podcast. As always, we're your hosts. I'm Dan.
I'm Matt.
And we want to thank you for taking the time to nerd out about music with us. This episode is brought to you by Eargasm Earplugs. Use code GENTLEMAN10 at checkout for a discount and take the step to protect your hearing today. We're back with another band interview episode. This one we're super excited about. We got Jim Gray from Caligula's Horse, a progressive metal band based out of Brisbane in Australia. What's up?
Hello.
We're so pumped that you're here.
Oh, yeah. I know it's early morning for you. I have to deeply apologize from the core of me for making you wake up before a reasonable time.
Hey, we're excited to chat about you.
Absolutely. That's, that's the sacrifices we make. No, I'm just kidding. This is great. we're super excited for you to be here with us. We've been listening to Caligula's Horse for a long time, and, it was quite the shock, to be honest, that we get the opportunity to sit down with you. So we're very appreciative,
your time. Man. Thank you.
Absolutely. And, you're welcome anytime. And we're gonna just go ahead and jump right into this. One of the things that we like to ask bands, or artists, whomever we get on the podcast, because so many people focus on the music, which obviously that's going to be a focus of this conversation, but not many people focus on the band members and sort of the origin story, where the band came from, how they came to be. And I feel like that's an important part of any band's journey. So we'd love to ask you, how did the band form, give us your origin story, basically.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, actually, because, excuse me, I am quite unwell. Looking back, it's funny. I didn't hold on to the first time I met Sam, I don't think. I think he probably, in terms of memory, has known me for longer than I've known him, if that makes sense. but we used to, but that's just the case with my brain, on account of how things just seem to just, it's like my memory storage is just downhill. It all just kind of gradually just rolls by. And you're like, oh, that's gone now. I remember I was at a rehearsal room with my previous band, Arcane, which was kind of my first real kind of original progressive metal band. And we were at this crappy little rehearsal room in Northgate, and a whole bunch of other bands were renting rooms in the same place. And I have a really distinct memory of Sam walking by the door and kind of waving and looking in on the way to his band's rehearsal. And he had a long ponytail at the time, looked all cool and shit. And I'm like, I don't know why I held on to that particular memory, but yeah, anyway, so Sam was in a band called Quandary were doing one thing and he wanted to do something else, and so he went and just went, here's my brain, and just put it in like as many insane ideas as I could into music and just completely unleashed and put it on this instrumental thing, and had the idea for having guest vocalists come on and do track by track on the whole thing. And he had a couple of people in mind, and he asked me to come and jump on one. And we did that. And then we just kind of went, yeah, that was fun. You want to do the rest? And I'm like, yeah, I want to do the rest. And then we were so stoked with the process that we ended up collaborating on the single from that album. We wrote The City Has No Empathy together over a little bit after we'd recorded the vocals for those other tracks. And it basically ended up being just like, Do you want to get a band? Do you want to turn this into a band? Do you want to do a band? Because people were listening to it. They were going like, this is great. We're like, all right, well, fucking, I guess we're a band. The original lineup was essentially two of the members of Quandary, of Sam's old band, and that was Jeff Irish and Dave Cooper. And we had another mate, Zach Greenshill, who came and joined us, and that we were the original lineup for right up until after Bloom. And then everything started kind of shifting around a little bit. But yeah, it's basically born of Sam's need to do something different from what he was currently doing and get it all out there. And then just born of I suppose the natural chemistry that we found between us when we were just kind of like, yeah, I'll guest on your stuff. And like, yeah, this is going really well. So yeah, it just kind of felt right, I guess. One of those.
That's cool. It just kind of accidentally happened. And
yeah, I had promised my girlfriend at the time, now my wife, that I wasn't going to join another band. We'd gone through some serious like scheduling stuff. Like we'd had this nightmare of being too busy and too much on our plates and just everything going wrong for a long time. And so I left another band that I've been in, and we're just like, all right, we got to simplify things. Things are getting a bit tough, and then it just sort of fell into seals. I'm like, hey, babe. Yeah, so that happened, and it was fine as it turned out. So yeah.
That's awesome. That's really cool. I wish I could just stumble into a band.
I'm lucky as shit because I didn't just like, for real, this is one thing I don't talk about enough, is that it's like, I'm this fucking pair of clown shoes. And like, for all, I acknowledge my strengths. I do. I'm not just poo-pooing myself, but my brain, as discussed, is not one that can commit in a straight line to a lot of things. So it's like, if I had my own solo project, it wouldn't get finished. It would just sort of like get derailed and fizzle and whatever else. So the fact that I didn't just stumble into a band, but I stumbled into a Sam Vallon and kind of managed to stay there is extraordinarily lucky, because that is a one of a kind dude, for real. Like, that guy is just out there, man.
That's awesome. Absolutely. That like, you guys kind of like found the, not only you found a band that like you vibe with, but also like you kind of complement each other and keep each other on track and for everything. Sure, yeah. Like that's
took a little bit of gear grinding at the beginning to kind of make that happen, but yeah, we definitely honed into a machine that actually ends up working pretty well.
Yeah, oiled the gears.
That's it.
It took a bit.
I mean, I look at the scene sort of right now. A lot of bands are sort of starting to blend together, kind of sound the same, follow like the same trends. And I kind of look at you guys as a band that has almost always remained true to your sound, evolving by, you know, that's, you know, it's, nothing's copy paste throughout your discography, but I feel like, you know, you guys have remained true to the sound that you've cultivated. Very few bands sort of have the sound that you guys have cultivated. I would say none. I mean, you guys are very unique. You know, you're in kind of the same vein as like a Haken or a Leprous, maybe, but like standing alone. Maybe you've gotten progressively heavier as your releases have come out. But I would love to know sort of like, what's your particular approach to writing music, and how do you, you know, How did you come up with sort of, this is our sound, or is it just all natural? Like, I would just love to hear your approach to writing music.
Well, I think it took us a while to kind of find where our feet were most comfortable. You know, there's a lot of experimentation on Moments on the first album. Obviously, that like I said, that was just Sam going, here are my fucking thoughts. Right. But then like River's End, we very much went like, you know, we got caught up in the songwriting and the energy that we were bringing to a live show and kind of going like, oh, wow, I'm really enjoying that. Let's bring some of that. And then the story started to write itself, so to speak, while we were writing the River's End and going like, okay, so this is going to be a concept album now. This is like a cool thing. And we experimented with all of that. But I think really it was when we hit Bloom that we kind of went like, that's kind of us, you know, this is like, I feel really like this is where we're going with this. And I think it was because we'd had an experience of a couple of albums and a lot more playing together, a lot more time together. And the reason that I feel like our music is different is because we're not compromising in any way from what it is that we intend to say, you know what I mean? So there is never a point. And I'm not putting words in other bands' mouths. If other people are making genre music, good on them, fucking go for it if that's what you love. But like for us, there's never a question about like, who's going to like this? Is this going to go fly well with the prog heads? Is this going to, you know, like, should we have chosen to be a metalcore band, do you think? Do you think maybe we should go back in time and just actually maybe do something that could have made us even just like a little bit of money? Maybe. But like, you know, there's never, you know, so there's never any thought about that. Our thought is just kind of like, where is this taking me? And what does the song have to say? And what do I have to say as a result of being inspired by what the song has to say? So I kind of get this thing where, you know, Sam will send me some stuff and I'll start humming or singing gibberish over the top of it. And I'll kind of hold on to one or two little bits. And those patterns will kind of form more solid shapes. And sometimes a vowel shape will lead me to a word, and then that word leads me to an idea, and then I follow that thread. And so that's, so when I say like what the song has to say, it's basically like what I can intuit from the song as I'm kind of working on it. And then I go like, oh, that's what it's doing. And then I can apply my kind of songwriting ethic and storytelling ethic to that process now that I've kind of intuited my way through where it's going to go. So it's like the two of us work really well for that, because Sam will just go away, and he's just like, just can create such a detailed thing so quickly, and put so much thought and effort into it, and then sort of send it through to me so that I can kind of just like unravel myself over the top of it. But yeah, I think the core of it is that like we don't give a fuck. then I think that helps a lot with
so
I don't
want to
be a
like...
prog band, man. I don't want to be a prog band. I don't listen to a lot of prog music. Like,
oh really?
Obviously I grew up like listening to Dream Theater and shit, and like fucking all of my contemporaries in the scene, I love them dearly. They're wonderful people and they're amazing musicians and stuff like that. But for the most part, I don't know, man. I listen to emotional female-fronted music a lot of the time. I don't generally listen to a lot of progressive metal because it doesn't really do a huge amount for me. And that's possibly why
I respect that.
My approach to that isn't the same as other people, because I'm not listening to those other bands and going, oh, that's cool.
You're not gaining your influence from something in the genre. So you're kind of, your influences are kind of pulling externally. And so you get a little more flavors of other genres into your music.
It's funny you say that, because you're like, I don't want to be a prog band, but what you just described is like the most prog shit I've ever heard. So, you know,
I
like to...
I don't want to be a capital P prog band is what I'm saying.
I like, but... yeah, don't put yourself in a box. I definitely respect that. But, you know, concepts and taking inspiration from other genres and all that stuff, I'm just like, you're
not prog. It's not prog in any way. I totally get what you mean. It's like the kind of I really enjoy the journey that we go on with songwriting, and it doesn't get overwhelming. I only feel overwhelmed in like the weeks leading up to a release.
Like, oh yeah,
released the new single Golem the other week, and it was just like, only then so did good. I start going like, fuck man, people are gonna hear this now. And then it hits all of a sudden, I go like, oh fuck, all right, true, I haven't even considered that. So that's the only part where I think about that. That's right at the end.
That's because it's like been written already and it's like done, and now you have the time to like sit with it and think about it before it's released. It's probably like the imminent like Calm Before the Storm kind of thing.
I can't wait,
like,
for the bad reviews. I can't wait for the bad...
Well, you're not going to get any from us. So
do you put stock in that? I mean, like, you as a musician who sort of, you know, you write the music you want to write, kind of like you said, you know, you like to go with the flow. You like to write the music that you want to write. You're not trying to cater to any particular audience. You get put into that prog metal bucket. If you know, an outlet were to come out and say, like, you know, this is shit, like, does that weigh on you? Or do you look at it like the people who like our music know what we're about, know what we're trying to do, and that's really all that matters? Like, is there any outside opinion that like would weigh on you to even maybe consider changing your direction? Or is it just like, we did what we wanted to do, we're proud of it, and fuck you kind of thing?
Well, the latter is very much the core of it. But like, I honestly, there would be nothing that would make me change what we do that didn't come from within the band. But like, I honestly think if something came out and was that severe, like, because negative reviews sting, you can't help it. I'm a soft man, you know what I mean? But like, the, you know, negative reviews do sting, but when there's something extreme, like someone fucking just hating on it, it is so funny. It is like, so it is so much more funny when somebody is like trying to express their anger in a comment or a review to other people, like, you don't understand, this is fucking awful. That to me is pure comedy, and I love it so much.
Have you had that experience?
Oh yeah.
Really?
I guess it happens everywhere, but like, I look at your
catalog,
there was a
doozy
with
In Contact. It was during
what
it was in the Inertia and the Weapon of the Wall. They were not a fan of
that's
the
crazy.
Spoken word piece. But their words were something like, I remember it was like, you know, the album was going so well, and then they had to go and take a huge shit in the middle of it. Why do they need some angry Irish guy yelling
Oh man, I mean, like,
it cracked me up because it's me. That's crazy. It's not Irish at
some
all.
Crazy Irish guy.
That is pretty hysterical.
That's nuts.
Love that shit.
I mean, like, and I look at it like, even if you don't like an entire collected, you know, work, like Dream the Dead's one of the best songs I've ever heard. Like, that song's amazing. So how you can listen to that record and
that's your takeaway is...
and then like hurry up and run to the internet to bitch about one part. That's crazy.
I mean, I guess if for nothing else, at least like your music is creating emotional responses. Like, it's, you know,
it is. Yeah.
It's whether that they're positive or negative.
Yeah. It's someone cared enough to be pissed.
Yeah. It affected them enough, you know? And it's like, I feel like it's one of those things. I think it's an adage. I'm probably paraphrasing it, but it's along the lines of like, if you're dividing people, you're doing something right, because you're doing something that's effective. Like, some people love it. If no one is standing in the middle going, eh, then you've done pretty well. You know what I mean? Like, some people fucking despise everything you've done. And I know that there's people out there that just don't understand why people like Caligula's Horse. And I love that. And it's fine. And again, by all means, fucking hate the shit. I don't care. The only thing that really gets me down when it comes to reviews and stuff is people putting words in my mouth. Like, if you have somebody quoting the song out of context, or saying that a song means something, or, you know, blah, like that kind of shit. It's just kind of like, man,
that's not what I intended.
Tell me what I mean by that.
Yeah.
Mad about it. Like, you know, if it's like, you're getting mad at a dream you had, that's not real. It's fine.
hating the music or disliking the music or disagreeing with the music is one thing, but like trying to sort of, you know, create this narrative that doesn't exist and then sort of then go on the internet and rant about it. I can see that being pretty.
Yeah. Kind of like awful, slanderous, so. Like trying to put words in your mouth and.
Yeah. I know what he's up to over there.
His subliminal messages and his lyrics.
Trying to bring him down.
But like you said, I mean, people clearly care enough or interested enough or whatever to have an opinion, whether their opinion is shit or not. But
my opinions are generally pretty shit, just for the record. Hey, what's your take on this album?
Oh man. Speaking of albums and just, you know, I'd love to sort of go through, not necessarily go through your discography, but I feel like, you know, from the beginning to where you guys are now, I sort of said this in the, you know, I don't know if I said this in the beginning of this interview or if I said this before we came on air, but I feel like you guys have stayed very true to your sound, and maybe gotten a little bit progressively heavier throughout. You know, I feel like Rise Radiant had maybe some of your heaviest moments, and then Gollum, the single, I feel like might be one of your heavier songs. And I'd love to know kind of like, what are your inspirations? I mean, we touched on that a little bit. You know, you don't necessarily listen to prog, you listen to, you know, like female fronted bands, musicians, whatever. But I'd love to hear sort of just the band collectively, even instrumentally, because there are some very shreddy moments in your catalog that are like melt your face off. And I get 90s vibes for instrumentally at times. I get like bands like Riverside at times, especially early on in your catalog, for moving forward to, like, you know, even though you don't want to be a prog band, a lot of, you know, prog elements, modern prog metal elements, you know, akin to like a Haken or a Leprous, maybe even a Tesseract, especially that, like, the newer track. I get a lot of like Tesseract vibes. I'd love to hear sort of, you know, what your inspirations are as a band to your writing process, maybe how those have evolved, if they've evolved. Just anything on that. I'd love to hear it.
Yeah. So like, I think, you know, everyone that has ever written music for a long time together has had like a journey of kind of discovery of self and then exploration of that self when, you know, over time. And so there's always the natural progression over time of that. But I think distinctly album to album, it's also that we reflect thematically or at least kind of in terms of the energy that we're putting into the music, kind of what we've just been through, you know? So it's like coming into Bloom, like I'd been through a really, really rough time. And it was like, we wanted to put something positive out and just like really inspirational messaging and just like no languishing in the dark, that kind of stuff, you know, and kind of move away from all of that. And then touring on that and, you know, exploring that and then finding ourselves writing In Contact. Some of it was after this European tour that we did. Wait, no, that was backwards. Rise Radiant was that. Yeah. I know what order the discography's in. it's not important. But yeah, like, so like, you know, we found ourselves on this tour in 2018, and then through the exposure of ourselves to the world in that way, and the kind of adventures that we were on, and the high that we were all feeling, the connection with other people, that's when a lot of this stuff sort of kind of started coming together for Rise Radiant, this punchy kind of like, you know, live focused kind of music. And with Charcoal Grace, with the new stuff, with the single Golem, it's all direct reflections of what we went through during the pandemic. So it's like I didn't even know if the band was going to continue. Like everything kind of just sort of totally fell to the side. And this thing that I'd worked on for 20 years, my entire original music career, was just kind of like, yoink. And I put all my eggs in that basket too, by the way. So they say not to do that. And that's why. because eggs are very fragile, you see.
You just got to hard boil them first.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? Actually, you know what? Put all your eggs in the one basket, but just hard boil the fuckers. Do it.
Exactly.
That's deep move. Fry. That's the move. Deep fry the eggs. What am I fucking talking? I'm talking about eggs now. No, that's right. Yeah. So like going into Charcoal Grace and going like, all right, well, we've all changed fundamentally in that time. You know, I don't feel like I'm the same person before COVID, as sad as that is to say. I can't find that guy anymore. I can't find that kind of positive, connected.
I feel like a lot of people share that sentiment for sure. It was a rough time, and we've gotten a lot of good music out of it, though. I will put that out there. I mean, selfishly.
Well, I mean, interesting. That's what the song Golem is about, actually. But yeah, like after the kind of massive collective freaking ego death of, you know, that experience, it's kind of like coming back and going, yeah, okay, I don't even know if I can write an album again. You know, should I? Like, am I capable of getting up on stage and performing in front of people? I wouldn't know what that's like. Because the character of myself was totally gone. So finding it again was really challenging. And that is actually reflected in the songs, the album's lyrics, and the album's tone generally as well, which you'll hear more of soon enough.
Can't wait.
Interesting that you say that about Golem, though. That you said that because Golem is like, it was as a direct result of that exact thing of, you know, music coming out of the pandemic, you know, like heard it a lot. People going like, oh, this sucks, but artists are going to make great stuff. I can't wait, you know, and that killed me. I was just sitting there going, fuck, man. Like, why do you expect that I'm less trapped than you, or like less completely fucked than you? Where like I'm sitting here, I've never felt less creative in my life. Yeah. Everything just got taken away from me, man. You want me to sit down and go like, anyway, here are my feelings in G. Like, you know, it's not, I can't fucking, I'm not going to do that. So that was kind of a horrible feeling. And I wanted to kind of reflect some of that repugnant kind of attitude in the song, but also the other side of it being that acknowledging in the song that other people have also gone through the same kind of tragedy, and all they're doing is reaching for something that is of comfort to them, which is what we do. So it's kind of, it's both beautiful and tragic and angry and all those sort of things. So yeah, interesting that you should say that, because that's literally what the new single's about. So that's cool.
That's awesome. That is really interesting. And when you say that too, about like beautiful and kind of dark at the same time, it's like, I think watching the music video for it too, is like, where, you know, the camera like flips and it kind of goes into like the dark realm, and it has kind of that like beauty of now like the sunbeams.
Sexy Caligula source. Like, yeah, it's, we go into the sexy room and then the dork room where we wear fucking, I don't know. Sam's wearing like a cardigan in that one, which is really comfy. And nice. It looks fantastic. And then we go to the leather jacket room. So like that special effect, by the way, is a practical effect.
Oh, really?
Because Dave, the director, he had a Dave Hunter also plays drums for a band called Circles as well. I don't know if you're familiar with Circles.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, fucking yeah. They were on that tour with us in 2018. He directed the music video. Anyway, so he had his little gimbal thingy, keeps the camera perfectly steady, but it also control it to turn
and flip it
on an axis. So
yeah, I have a cousin that does videography, and that's such a cool like thing.
It's fucking, and it's not that big. You know, you're looking at me like his forearm was fucked by the end of a full day's shoot, but at the same time, it's pretty awesome. And so he's basically got me to do like a big stompy stomp on the ground, and then just followed my movement and basically and sort of dropped the camera to the ground level. And then we set up the whole band later on, and he had the camera turned upside down with the gimbal resting on the ground, and then got me to stand in the same position and then played the song, and he came up and the camera slowly rotates back to its original position in the thing. So that's not like a special effect. That's actually like a practical effect that the camera is turning. It is just,
It's very really cool.
I know, it's fucking awesome, man. Like, I love shit like
that. That moment in the music video is really epic. Like, it honestly, like, it feels like something that would be on like Stranger Things or something. Like, it's a very cinematic feeling.
It definitely didn't feel like one dude behind a camera dropping it to the floor. It definitely felt a lot more spectacular than that.
And just to touch on the video in general, like, now understanding more about sort of what Gollum is about, like the dichotomy of like the dark and light and the flip, like all that stuff, like makes a whole lot, like it's a very powerful visual for sort of what you were trying to represent in the song. So I think that's incredibly cool.
It's always tricky to do with like a performance clip, isn't it? Because like, you know, there's no storytelling necessarily going on there. It's just like a bunch of dudes. So the fact that Dave managed to kind of make it so coherent and cohesive is pretty cool.
Yeah, there's some really cool shots in that video. Like just the like close-ups of everyone playing, and like you see like the sun beaming through and stuff. It's like,
oh yeah,
really the God rays. Yeah, it's an awesome video. Awesome song too, but.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So your new album Charcoal Grey set to release on the 26th of January.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that a little bit if you don't mind, even if we got to be a little, you know, tiptoe around some things. So,
leak my own shit. I'm going to leak it now. I'm going to fucking let's do it.
So, obviously we got the new single. We'll leak it. Oh, now we're definitely not going to get it early, Matt. Way to go. We've obviously talked about the new single Gollum, which you know, we touched on a little bit, sort of where that the origins of that song came from. Is that sort of going to be the theme throughout the record? Let's start there. Conceptually, is that sort of the theme throughout the record, or did it take on sort of a different form? I know, like earlier on when we were talking, it sounds like you almost write the songs and then come up with like a, you know, conceptually, like, you know, how the record's going to flow lyrically or just story wise. You know, I'd be curious to know, is there a concept, you know, rooted in this record?
Well, it's interesting with the concept construction, like River's End, for example, was pretty much that, except that we got about maybe a third, almost halfway through writing the album. And that's when I realized like, oh, holy shit. And then we started writing with that story in mind for the rest of the album. So it's kind of like pushing the boulder over the hill and then just, in this case, there are some conceptual elements to it. There are some stories within the album. I would say that the album itself is a collection of themes and reflections on things that we went through. And so there's a lot of really personal stuff, and there's also a lot of really kind of big picture, broadly looking at stuff. But it is all, again, an exorcism of all of the experiences of the last few years, and kind of getting that out of our system, and then hoping that we can find a way to reconnect and a way to, you know, see ourselves as part of the world again, that kind of thing. So yeah, there is some conceptual elements to it, but a lot of it's very, very personal.
Nice. I mean, sometimes, you know, I would say even say most of the time when bands sort of write within a concept, it's very much rooted in reality. They almost use sort of the concept as a, you know, puppet, so to speak, for their reality. Like a band called Coheed and Cambria, which I seem to somehow mention every freaking episode. Like, you know, they have this entire concept called the Amory Wars, but that's very much rooted in like the lead singer's like
actual reality. Like he created these characters based off of real characters in his life and like sort of hid behind the concept in a way.
Wow.
And I think it's super powerful because I always think that there's a reason why, you know, like you don't, you know, some people are just natural storytellers and that's the reason, which is fine. But a lot of people sort of build these conceptual worlds based off, you know, as a way to sort of get, you know, their reality out there in some sort of way or express, you know, their true feelings or realities or whatever. But I know like on this record, there's a suite of songs, which is always one of my favorite things to see. Anytime I see that, I'm like, we're going to get some bangers. And it, you know, Charcoal Grace 1-4. Is there a meaning behind the title of the record? And can we, you know, what can we expect from that suite of songs? Is it going to be, is that sort of where that, you know, potential concept is rooted in there? Or is it just how it played out? I'd love to hear sort of a little bit more about that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the story that I mentioned in the album is the suite. So that is a self-contained thing.
Nice.
Those four parts. Charcoal Grace is kind of, it came to me as a result of kind to, I don't know, trying to think of ways to describe the kind of allure and beauty and horror of silence. And like, you know, it kind of going, you know, like what is, you know, what are the themes that I'm writing about right now the most, even when I'm writing my shitty rhyming couplets on my phone at 1:30 a.m. because I can't sleep? Like it was all along the lines of like silence and stillness, like being stuck and not being able to, not having a voice kind of thing. Like those were this place that we all felt like that we were trapped, figuratively speaking, and kind of going that, you know, we all kind of fell into that and then it kind of became habit and then it became an addiction kind of thing. And so it's like, it's Charcoal Grace, I think, to me sort of describes that, the beauty and the horror and the allure of that silence.
That's pretty awesome. That was an awesome description. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
And then sort of instrumentally and just really, I mean, there's a little bit of like, I always struggle to come up with how to describe these types of vocals, but harsh vocals, so to speak, on the new single, which I don't know if you don't explore really harsh vocals much in your discography up to this point.
I've never done it before.
I didn't think so, but I didn't want to say it and then have you be like, but actually,
actually, yeah, no, I've never done it before. And like, if I'm being honest with you, I still don't have the technique down.
I thought it was fantastic.
It sounds really good.
Honestly, it was like, well, I did, because I've listened, you know, like, I mean, I was spinning In Contact all week. I've got Bloomin' In Contact. I listened to them a lot. I had to go back and listen to the first two records over again, but I've explored your discography many times and that's why I was going to be like, if I'm wrong, I'm going to feel like shit, but, but
no, it's new. I wanted to try it.
It was one of probably the most exciting moments of the new track because it was so unexpected. I mean, and this is, I was talking, you know, I said earlier how like Dream the Dead is one of my favorite tracks, period. Not even just Caligula's Horse, but just, that's just such an amazing track. This new single is by far probably my favorite Caligula's Horse track.
Awesome.
And one of, you know, and one of the reasons why is like, it sounds very much like that style of Caligula's Horse, like that like section of In Contact, but like taken to a new level, a little bit heavier. So I guess the question rooted in this word vomit is, can we expect more of that on the new record? And would you say like, maybe this is like your heaviest record yet? I know you don't write to be heavy. You don't write to be prog, but just out of curiosity, with this coming, being born out of such a dark time, often heavy music is associated with dark times. So I figured it's probably worth asking the question of, you know, would you consider this your heaviest record yet?
Yes.
Nice.
I mean it depends on whether like how you describe it. It's not Meshuggah, you know what I mean?
No, but, like, no. And that like, would be such a huge like shift from your sound. Like if you guys just went straight Meshuggah with it, I think everyone would be like, what just happened? But
yeah,
I mean, I like the sort of subtle.
I don't do any more harsh vocals on the album. But in terms of the like the scope of it is all very dark. So even when it's kind of open and I don't know. I always do this because to me, when things open up, like for example, in like the bridge of Golem, where it has that whole Lydian section, I see petals getting blown upward. It's just a thing.
Yeah.
So that to me, you know, so even when it's open like that, it's still dark. And it does have some of the heaviest riffs and stuff that we've ever had on a record as well. So it's pretty freaking heavy. Hadn't even thought about that really until you asked. And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, it's some of the more like atmospheric stuff in your other albums, because the albums overall are like brighter in tone, then it's like it becomes like you said, kind of petals blowing upward and stuff. But in this album, we expect, like, because the subject matter is darker, that maybe the like atmospheric stuff is more ominous and like foreboding than it is.
Yeah, or just straight up sad. I like at certain points as well. You know, it's a mourning album as well.
Yeah,
excuse me, but I mean, like the album is not without its positive side, obviously, because we couldn't sign off on it if it was just like, "Hey guys, we're back. I know we've had a really rough year. Let's make it."
It seems
worse.
Like you're. It seems like your guys' like general nature is just like positivity. I mean, that's kind of like what I get from a lot of, you know, your music in general. So I would have been surprised if this was just like a straight up like dark, sad record.
Yeah.
But also not surprised because of the subject matter and just given what we all went through and all that stuff. But but I do like to hear that, you know, there's still some sort of like positivity or something like that that's built into the record, like maybe even sort of like a this sucked, but you know, like we're still
connected
here.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Yeah,
I love that.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest sort of themes that sort of crops up throughout the album is like a loss of faith, I guess. Mostly a loss of faith in humanity, like what we saw everyone collectively losing their minds in different directions and stuff in ways that we thought were cartoonish. And you know, if you saw it in a movie, you'd be like, pfft. And then it just happened. Yeah, that sort of thing. But ultimately, you know, I would like to, while exploring those themes and exploring those stories and reflecting my frustrations and my still present anger about that sort of stuff, is to make sure that everyone knows that we are still, you know, fundamentally connected and that the way is forward and all of that sort of thing. So I wouldn't want to sign off on something that was like celebrating the dark, just more these stories have to be told. That's all.
Absolutely. That's awesome. Yeah.
I like that nugget of hope in, you know.
Yeah. Always hope.
Homeopathic kind of drop of joy in the album, just at the end.
That's it. The last like 20 seconds or so of the outro track.
The hidden track is just the cover of Don't Worry, Be Happy. Like, it's just, you know, you got to skip 32 silent tracks to get to it.
That would be actually pretty awesome if that was the thing.
Completely ruin everything. That'd
be such another random prog thing to do. So switching gears, just a reminder, the new album Charcoal Grace is going to be released on January 26th, 2023 or 2024. Sorry. So keep an eye out for that. Switching gears into the touring aspect of things, because that's something that you guys do a good bit. And, you know, there's an upcoming tour. You just announced a North American tour with Earthside kicking off January 31st in Washington, D.C. So glad to see you guys come to the U.S. Just out of curiosity, you guys had a U.S. tour that was announced pre-pandemic, right? And that didn't end up working out. Is that true?
Sure did.
I thought so, because I was like, I'm pretty sure I had tickets.
Yeah, dude. It was on Rise Radiant. So like, Radiant was released, I think, on May 20. I think. Whatever it was May 2020, right? And we were meant to be playing in Chicago like that night. It was like on release. And then it just sort of got to the point where we were about to start paying deposits for buses and flights and things like that. And we were still kind of like, I don't know what's going on. And then it was just kind of like got to the point where we're like, we got to pull the plug. That was a deeply depressing time. Thank you for bringing that up.
I'm sorry.
But like, totally fucking stoked that it's actually happening. Cause like, we've wanted to tour the States for a long time. And we've had a following in the States for a really long time. It's just that it's never really come together in a way that's been feasible until now, which is fantastic.
Yeah, we're so pumped to have you. I know that's you know, we're in some prog circles that are very much excited about the fact that you know that we're going to be able to see you guys play live. You know, I mean, it's you played and I might be wrong on this, but didn't you play like some sort of prog festival in like Atlanta?
We did. We played Prog Power USA in Atlanta twice now, actually.
Yeah, that's right.
And the first one was at the end of 2021. It was meant to be in the lead up to the whole thing. But you know, it's really interesting because like our desire to tour the States is, you know, obviously twofold at least. And that is that like, we would love to just travel and see the United States. It's a place that I've never really done any extensive travel. So it'd be really cool to do that, but also to go and play to new people and, you know, expand the reach of the band and celebrate a new album. And the fact that it's like, it's right after, it's like days after the release of Charcoal Grace is when we're landing in the US is really exciting to me for sure. Cause you know, just fucking bang, kick in the door and here's a whole bunch of new tunes. Hi. Sorry we're late.
Can we expect a heavy dose of new music? Or the reason why I asked that question too is you know, since this is your first time touring through the US, I'd be curious to know sort of the mix, you know, since we've never gotten to hear, you know, anything played live by you guys. I was wondering, you know, is there going to be sort of a nice mix of old stuff and new stuff? Obviously, you're going to be supporting the record, so it's safe to assume we should get a lot of new stuff. But
That is something that we've given a great deal of thought to, actually, because like we've had exactly the same thought that it's just like, man, like the people have been waiting since Moments for this. Like we're literally like talking fans from 2011, 2012. Fuck those people. No, like, so what we're planning on doing is we're definitely gonna be playing a big chunk of the new stuff, but we are gonna go to some great effort to try and create a blend of the back catalog that is, you know, gonna make people happy. Can't please everybody all the time, especially with six albums now. It's a little
too much, that definitely makes it tough. I mean, yeah, it's a lot of material to try to you're definitely not going to please everybody, but honestly, that's not true, because the fact that you're here, you're going to be here and touring and, you know, we have the opportunity to actually see what you guys can do live on stage and stuff. So, you know, I think everyone's going to, no matter what you play, you can go up there and play cover songs. I think people will still be pumped to see that you're here. So,
just take me home, country roads, just over and over
again. Just every show, just playing Take Me Home, Country Roads. Funny.
I was thinking about it though, and you know what's interesting about touring the States compared to like say touring Europe and stuff is that you got to understand, like, in the mentality of an Australian, travel, if you're leaving the country, we refer to it as overseas. There is no other travel.
Yeah.
You know.
Sense. Yeah.
Right.
And so it, like, going to Europe kind of blows our minds because it's like country to country and whatever, just in a few hours. You know, it takes Josh 2.5 hours to drive to rehearsal. Like, you can cross a border in that time in fucking, you know, Liechtenstein. What's amazing about it is that, like, when you think about, even as an Aussie, when you think about traveling to the US, the kind of travel that you imagine, thanks to your country's cultural hegemony, is like the road trip.
Yeah.
Driving across the country, you know, we get in the car or the van with the boys or with the family and drive across the country. And it's like, it sort of clicked to me. It's completely aside. This is a totally paramusical thing, is that it's like, as a result of making the music and the fact that we do get to go on tour, is like, I now get to have that experience, that kind of Hollywood road trip across the States experience. I just get to play a show every night to make it even cooler. So it's fucking awesome.
Yeah. And the crazy thing is, I mean, a lot of people, and this is a tangent, but I love tangents. We love tangents on this show. Most people in the US don't even do that.
That road trip.
So you're gonna get to experience something that probably 65 or more percent of the US, maybe probably more than that, has not experienced.
By the end of your tour, you'll see more states than I have.
Yeah.
Probably.
And like my wife and I actually, like,
we got to do the road trip thing. So we got to, like, you know, we took 3 weeks, got in a car, drove like a total of, I don't know, close to 7,000 miles around the US. And
what's but that up in until that,
oh man, I don't know. Sorry about our imperial system or whatever the shit that is. we apologize for all of our dumb shit that we do over here. But it was one of the coolest experiences that you know I've ever been a part of. So I'm excited that you guys are going to get to sort of experience that and hopefully see some of the best of what our country has to offer, because there is a lot of shit, but there's also a lot of beauty too. So I think that's going to be awesome, and hopefully this leads to you guys wanting to come back again and again. So
for sure.
But continuing on the tour talk, you just got off a tour with Devin Townsend. I'd love to hear about that.
No, he's okay. So here's the thing. He, like, my personal life has been super crazy busy in the lead up to this. There's just been a lot going on, and then add the oncoming release of the singles and getting the album stuff sorted, everything. I've just been busy. Haven't had a lot of time. And so I didn't have any kind of time to consciously mentally prepare myself for the fact that we were going to do the Devon tour. It was just kind of like, all right, onto a plane, off we go. We're doing another one of these. And I just kind of, I arrived at the Forum in Melbourne, which is this insane venue. Like, I've never been inside. The outside is like this weird fucking theater / castle / mosque looking place. And you walk inside and there's this huge stage. And all up above it is like all of this carved Roman statue style things framing the entire stage. It's a total spectacle. It's cool. It's wild.
Crazy.
And we're coming up the elevator. I'm lugging the gear into the room. And I walk in and then I look up on stage. And it's just Devin and his band are there. And I've gone, oh, there he is. And I've just arrived as they were about to start a song. And he started playing the first few notes of the song Truth. And I fucking left. I had to go. I couldn't be in that room anymore. It was this moment of like, holy fucking shit. It all hit at once. Because again, like I said, normally I'd have time to kind of like process and kind of like, cool, I'm looking forward to this. And I am a fucking fanboy. Like, I like his music. It's great. It's just like, this dude, I swear to God, the way that I described it to someone recently is that, like, fuck it. It's been so hard for so long. I have been fucking brute forcing my way through my life since I was like fucking 20 years old. And the entire time, Devin has been there. The entire fucking time during that journey, Devin's music has been a part of me overcoming stuff or understanding stuff. And even looking up to him personally as an individual, not just musical. It's like, I swear, I'm telling you, man, I'm a fucking fanboy. The dude is my fucking hero. And so, to walk in unprepared and have that happen, I'm just like, no, there's no way.
It's too much all at once.
It's too much all at once. Absolute stimulus overload. And so we did have this wonderful experience where we were watching from side stage. And again, that on its own is beautiful, because it's like, again, there he is. And you're watching this thing. And if you guys have seen Devin live, right?
I have, yes.
I've seen him live in the quarantine, not like live on stage.
Oh, yeah, like live. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he did the YouTube stuff I watched.
True. There is nothing like it. Nothing compares. And again, we've toured with so many fucking bands that I love and heroes of ours. And like, I don't think I've ever had an experience where I'm watching from side stage and realize my mouth is open before. One of those, yeah, because like early on in our career, you know, we would tour with these slightly bigger Australian bands like Voyager at the time, like we were supporting them. And then we were supporting 12 Foot Ninja and stuff like that. We were just starting to, you know, find our feet, and we would always watch these bands and go, oh, fuck, we got to get better. Like, oh, fuck, I didn't realize that that's where the bar was being set. And so we would have that experience, and it's been a very long time since that's happened. And that was one, like watching that show from side stage going, holy shit. I can't even fathom that. And I've just cried a whole lot. Just cried a lot. It's like, because it was right as they were playing Deadhead. And it's just this fucking, Oh man, I fell to pieces. I was just an absolute mess. So yeah, I know that this isn't like a cool way to tell a touring story. Like, yeah, we met our heroes and we played it super cool. No man, I wept like uncontrollably. It was an unforgettable and transformative experience.
No, I'd rather hear the genuine story than just like, oh yeah, we get to play with him. It was pretty sweet. He was a cool guy. Like I like the genuine. I mean, dude's a legend. So. That's an incredible experience. I can't imagine there being any better moments or stories or anything like that around touring, but I do want to ask, you know, you've toured with some cool bands, you've opened for some cool bands, and you know, are there any other experiences, tours or anything like that that stand out to you? Or I mean, obviously this sounds like this was a
pretty hard. Yeah, well I mean, again, it's usually with touring and stuff, it's kind of the stuff that goes on around the tour that is what makes it more kind of memorable. I mean, there's always shows and things like that that are like, wow, I'll never forget that one. But a lot of the time, because you're just going from one place to another to another to another, sometimes it does bleed into, you know, each other, and you find yourself not knowing what city you're in. I now have a habit, and the guys laugh at me every time, because I do it in Australia too. Like last weekend, we were playing Froth and Fury Festival in Adelaide. And I was just, right before I go on stage, I say out loud to all of them, looking in the eyes, I was like, we're at Froth and Fury Festival in Adelaide. That's the city we're in. And that's what I'm going to say. And I have to do that, because otherwise I'm going to fucking slip. And there's been a couple of times where I'm just like, I practice the language as well, like just to get just a good Abend, you know, to get like a little fucking niceness of me saying something in their language at the beginning of a show. And sometimes I will forget where I am. And it's not even just a case of like, I forgot the language. I don't know the city. I'll just go like, good evening, friends. And that's as far as
So we hear you say good evening, friends. We know you don't know where you are.
It's because I have no idea where I am. Exactly. It's because I need an adult. It's because I need you to call me a fucking ambulance. This is what I need. But no, I will say that there's one that has been absolutely burned into my brain that will never leave. It is a story that I've told before, but I think it's an important one to repeat. And that is that in 2015, it was our first tour of Europe. And we were on a bus with a Norwegian band called Shining. And Jürgen Munkeby, the saxophonist and singer from that band, actually plays the sax on Graves.
Oh, sweet.
And plays with Emperor and a whole bunch of other bands now.
Oh, cool.
I think. He's just everywhere, that dude. He's just amazing. And this sort of made concrete how much of a fucking legend this guy was, because we were in Frankfurt and we were about to go to Paris when the Bataclan massacre happened at that Eagles of Death Metal show.
Yeah.
And so, you know, automatic weapons, explosions, people dying at a rock show en masse. And we didn't know if we were going to be able to get in to France. We didn't know if we should, you know, like we're all messaging back and forth from home. My wife's telling me, don't go, you know, all of this sort of stuff. And we end up having this big meeting on the bus and just going like, no, we'll go, you know, we'll do it. It's what's right. And, you know, can't let them win, all of that kind of rhetoric. And, a night or two later, we did get there and the border was open and we drove into Paris. It was like it was insane. It was so uncanny seeing it with so few people. And the only people that were really around were kind of like military types and like dudes with automatic weapons just everywhere. And we got to the venue and the venue took us on a tour of all of the escape routes in case we needed them and stuff. And so like all of this is just cooking away in the back of our heads. And a whole bunch of stuff happens that day. But regardless, we end up, you know, I'm looking at myself in the mirror before the show going like, fuck, man, like, just get up and do it, you know. And we're like, okay, go out on stage. And I gave this big speech about, you know, like going into the future with our arms open, you know, like we're not going to celebrate hate tonight, like all that sort of thing. By the way, fucking completely buried the lead of this thing. There was a line down the fucking street for this show. Like we actually literally put a Facebook post out earlier in the day going like, if you don't feel safe coming to the show, don't come if you don't feel safe. And they fucking lined up down the street. It was incredible. So packed house, everybody singing, you know, speech about love and all of that sort of stuff. We walk off stage. I'm buzzing. I'm like, it's night of my life. And then I'm going and I'm standing in the crowd for the beginning of Shining's set. And on his own, I'm getting goosebumps. On his own, Jürgen walks out of the stage with his saxophone and just rips into this incredibly aggressive version of the French national anthem, just fucking tears into it. and just puts his whole body into this fucking thing. And as the rest of the band is walking on stage, he's finishing and the crowd starts singing along. And then when it gets to the end, the band fucking hits in on this final note together and the crowd goes wild. And that's again, amazing. I'm at the back crying.
I'm getting goosebumps.
I cry a lot, guys.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's crazy.
But like straight up, that is one of those ones. And again, it's not, technically it is musical because it's the national anthem and it's a performative element, but like it was all the paramusical stuff, all of the shit that happened around that, that led to that moment to make this completely unforgettable and really bold and courageous statement from this incredible artist. Unbelievable. Legend.
That's amazing.
Legendary.
That's really cool.
Yeah, thank you for sharing with that.
That gave me goosebumps.
Awesome. I was going to say, yeah, I got chills. That's sweet.
Fuck yeah. Cool moments. Love that.
Wow. That is, how do we transition off of that? Jeez. Yeah, I think we're just gonna make a straight up cut transition here. We're just gonna move because that, yeah, I don't think we need to talk about.
Anyway,
how do you feel about the color blue? Tourists. How do you? No, I'm just kidding. So transitioning from that, one thing that we wanted to mention and talk about is, you know, we our listener base is very much like U.S. based, but our second biggest listener base is Australia.
Really?
And
there you go.
And we really appreciate everybody who listens to us over in Australia. Thank you guys so much.
Go team.
We would be curious to know, since obviously we've never been to Australia, what's the scene like over there? I mean just a small podcast. I mean, we've grown a little bit, but we're a relatively small podcast based in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania in the United States, and we have our second biggest listener base is Australia. Sometimes most of the time when we drop a new episode, the first listens are from Australia. It doesn't even matter when we drop it, which is crazy. So
we're just not sleeping. We're just hanging up the podcast.
but it makes us think that it's got to be a huge scene. I mean, you got bands like Polaris, Nabla Viscaris, Pliny, Carnival, Parkway Drive, if you want to go that route, North Lane. I mean, there's so many good bands in the progressive scene, the metal scene, the music scene that have come out of Australia. You obviously play a lot of shows in Australia. We'd love to hear about, you know, the scene. You've traveled through Europe and all that stuff. Is Australia holding their own? And, you know, I'd just love to hear about just the scene in Australia.
What's interesting is that, like, I think through my experiences post-pandemic of touring again, I have no fucking idea what the scene is at all, because I have no expectations and they keep getting fucking blown away. Like, you know, again, going to Adelaide the last weekend for this Froth and Fury festival thing, it was held at this brewery in this corner of town in Adelaide, and like they managed to get 4,000 people at this thing, and it was a mostly Aussie lineup and different alleyway stages and stuff like that. It was sick. I was like, that would not have happened in Adelaide last time I checked. You know, it was so my finger is fucking off the pulse and up my own ass. Like that is what I learned from all of that. What I will say though is that like the success of Australian bands, particularly heavy bands or progressive bands, whatever success you see from it is despite the Australian music industry. Really? Because it is almost like it is established to be in the way. The amount of fucking success gatekeeping and shit that happens in Australia if you don't sit in a particular mold is absolutely fucking outrageous. And the only way that anything heavier than even us, you know, would get any kind of rotation on the national broadcaster is if you were a band that is too big to ignore, like Parkway Drive, like fucking, not even Northlane. I mean, like, why can't I think of the Amity Affliction? There we go. Like bands like that, where it's just like they are big enough exports that you have to go, oh, fine, we'll play those. But like, there's a certain point where it's just you get snubbed enough. You know, I mean, like we chart all around the world. You know, we do okay. You know, we've come from fucking nothing to build up to this, writing music that is not intended to be like easily approachable or pop. It's like art, and we've somehow managed to get ourselves to a point where it's like we've dragged ourselves into the international scene, and we get snubbed to fuck over here. So it's like the fans are awesome, as you know, they're listening, they're staying up,
absolutely.
They're waiting for the episode drop. Go to bed, for fuck's sake. And but like, so you've got all these And people that are buying tickets to every show, people that are pre-ordering every fucking album, people that are doing all of that. But broadly, the actual industry in Australia is really dismissive of Australian artists. There's like a cultural cringe thing that happens that we have where it's like, we don't see our artists as legitimate. Excuse me. So it's like, so you guys have like the Super Bowl grand final thing. And there's always like a performance in the halftime show. That's like a thing. They had that on a smaller scale with the AFL grand final here in Australia, and we had fucking Kiss. You know what I mean? Like, we have so many fucking good artists, and I don't even mean just metal or prog or fucking whatever. You know what I mean? Like, we've got really good pop artists, like fucking fantastic Australian pop artists, and none of them got a fucking look in for the fucking halftime show because we're still fucking doing Kiss.
Washed up American rock band.
So that's thing. Crazy. We have this weird cultural thing where it's like, we don't see our stuff as legitimate. And I think that's partly your fault.
we'll take the blame. We'll take the blame. Sorry about that. Sorry about everything.
That's fine.
But would you say that that's in part due to just like, you know, the consumer in a way? Like, I don't know if like, I don't have like statistics or anything. Like, I'm sure none of us do, but like, do people from Australia consume Australian media more so or on par with what they consume from the US? Like, that's super weird to me that they would get Kiss versus like, whoever the most popular Australian pop artist, rock artist, whatever is at the time. Like, that seems like it would be more fitting.
Yeah, see, I don't even know, right? Like, because this is the thing, I don't even know about like the excuse me, like the surface level like majority of people listening to and enjoying music in Australia. But it's like, even if they're not experiencing it as art, like, it's pop music, it's fucking whatever, a lot of it is from overseas. There is a really strong groundswell. Like, don't get me wrong, people love Aussie music here, they do, but they are fed a lot of the same, and they are fed a lot of international stuff as well. And I'd like Voyager playing Eurovision, I think, was like a really big moment, because that band, I have said since the first time we met those guys, they are fucking just legends. When I say that they are rock stars, I mean that in the best possible way. I don't mean that like, you know, fucking, they're such fucking rock star. But like those guys, I remember meeting Danny Estrin upstairs at a festival that we were playing in Melbourne at one point. And he was doing little recordings for Andrew Hoag's metal show. And he was just like, you know, doing his little, hi, it's Danny Estrin from Voyager. And he was doing this voice and doing all this improv stuff. And I'm just like, he was so funny. That dude walks into a room and the whole place goes electric. He's like one of those fucking guys. He's a rock star. And so I've always said that like this band, they're full of legends that are incredible musicians writing really fun music and putting on one of the tightest shows you'll ever see. And I'm just like, if they were put on the right platform at the right time, and more people could see them, then people would love it, because it's hard not to. And I feel like exposure is really the issue. So it's like when you're in Australia, you're kind of just like, they only play what is okay to play. But I feel like if they played more of other shit, it's not the consumer's fault. If they played more of other shit, people would be like, oh, I like that, or I don't like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, Voyager kick ass. That's the moral of the story. It's
Voyager. Yeah, check out Voyager if you haven't, everybody who's listening to this. I mean, it seems to be a theme with the music industry, who gets propped up and who doesn't. There's always seems to be, and that's pretty much everywhere, but like exposure definitely is key, because you see some of these you guys included, you know, who some of these artists, some of these bands that are just putting out, you know, banger after banger, great record after great record, who seem to be sort of always under the radar, when then, you know, other bands who maybe are less talented but maybe slightly more appeal to, you know, the popular culture, pop music, whatever you want to say, somehow get propped up. And it's like, it's always weird to see which bands take off and which bands don't, and then you just sit there trying to think why that happened. And it there's usually no rhyme or reason like that you can logically come up with as to, you know, why bands are getting propped up. But I'm really excited to see you guys tour the US, because I think that's going to like help you guys to take off more. I mean, there's already so many people, there's a lot of hype around it in the prog scene about you guys coming to the US. And I think I think a lot of people are going to
discover you in a way, even though you guys have what, 5 records now, like, you know, they're gonna discover you now.
We're all old now. Well, yeah, you're one of those like granddads with overnight success. Oh, thank you.
But
open this fucking beat app.
I love it. I love it. But I just, you know, I think that, you know, this is gonna be hopefully big for you guys coming through the US.
No, and, I hope so. I really do. I mean, it's like, even if it's just a nice trip.
You know, yeah, fun. And honestly, worst case scenario, you get to see some cool shit. And and there's like pockets in the US of where, like, you know, the scene is amazing, the scene is kind of down, the scene is amazing, the scene is kind of down. And I think you'll probably experience that as you travel around. Hopefully, hopefully we can put on a good show for you in the crowd in Pittsburgh. And really looking forward to you coming through there. But
one of the things I'm looking forward to is seeing like the many Americas. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh yeah, like, it's such a different, yeah. It's interesting.
What's in movies and shit? Like, I'm curious to find out just like all the shit in the middle that I don't know anything about and just get surprised by, because
yeah,
I I've joked about the cultural hegemony thing a lot tonight because it's funny, but also because like it does change, you know, how you view yourself, and it definitely changed how Australians listen to music, for example. But also the idea of like going to America, I don't know what America really is. I only have a very broad and cartoonish image of what America actually is, and like the bajillion people that are over there living their everyday lives. And that goes for pretty much every country. So it's like when I travel, I try to kind of engross myself in that and remind myself that I am Australian. I'm not American. I'm not Irish. I'm fucking
not Irish. Irish guy just yelling in the middle of a record, you know.
Irish. I mean, of course my family's Irish, but like, fuck. How could they know? But that's what I look forward to. I look forward to finding out how naive I am about America.
Yeah. And when you're in Pittsburgh, if you're looking for any recommendations of things to do or see or whatever, definitely we'll definitely.
How do I get as fat as possible as quickly as possible?
Oh, we can get you there. We can get you there. Don't you worry.
Fuck yeah, dude. we can get you 15 pounds in one.
Oh yeah, one night we got you.
I'm ready.
So you know you mentioned there's a lot of amazing Australian artists, and I kind of wanted to give you a minute to maybe prop some up. So if there are any that stand out to you that you want to maybe mention here.
I'm gonna use my brain. Look at me thinking. I think like straight out the gate, one that I'm listening to a lot at the moment, partly because I love them, but also because it's my oldest daughter's favorite, is a band called Relica. R-E-L-I-Q-A. Young band. And they've had a couple of EPs now. I think they've got a full length album, hopefully sometime soon. I'm not sure. Incredible. Truly one of the bands that's kind of like you listen to and you go like, I haven't been excited about something in a while. That's awesome. Oh, nice. It's like, it's really adventurous, really creative, really fun, really energetic and kind of frenetic sounding sort of stuff. And, I'm a big, big old fan. Just got to list off some mates. You know, obviously I've given Voyager a shout because they deserve it. There's also a band from Adelaide called Dissidia. That is D-Y-S-S-I-D-I-A. I think. They're really heavy. Very technical. Very cool. Lovely people.
I think actually we might have gotten an email from them.
Oh, really?
I think so.
We might have.
I think the spelling's different though, so maybe it's a different
band. Maybe it's a different band. Might be different.
Could but be, or I
it
just
sounds familiar.
Spell it right. There's also sounds that distinct familiar. Possibility. But they're out of Adelaide. Obviously, our buddies in Circles, who I mentioned before. I Built the Sky as well. Instrumental guitarist.
Oh, I forgot I Built the Sky.
Rowan Stevenson, yeah. Fucking amazing. I'm forgetting friends, and that makes me feel bad. Sleep Makes Waves. As well, yeah. Opus of a Machine. Just gonna keep naming stuff. How deep into this can I go? I'll leave it there because that's a whole bunch. But you should definitely go check those out. There are, by the way, like I said, my finger is not on the pulse. Like, you know, I'm a fucking dad in my late 30s with a fucking full time job and shit. So I was like, my like you know knowledge of the scene is kind of I don't have my thumbprint on it. I know what I know, and that's about it. But I know that there's a whole stack of young, hungry, fucking exciting bands coming out of Australia. I just don't know who they are.
Yeah, and I mean, we see it all the time, and yeah, there's just so many big bands that, you know, or up and coming bands from Australia that are, you know, sort of taking the scene by storm. And
oh yeah,
so that's why I like to, you know, and usually I'll always ask a band, we'll always ask a band, you know, like what are the bands around you? Cause like the local scene is, I mean, that's where these bands sort of come up through, and sometimes it's nice to catch them early on. And so yeah, definitely check out any of these bands. Everybody who's listening, obviously,
I took some notes for myself.
I did too. Yeah. I've been writing them down, so I'm super pumped. Maybe we'll throw a couple on. We do like a jams of the week playlist every week.
Oh, fun. And,
we try every week. Sometimes some weeks, obviously, we're busy. Matt full time job, me full time job, Matt full time student. On top of that, it's tough.
Yeah, we usually do it on Monday, and then sometimes I'll be like late. I'll like wake up in the middle of the night on Monday, and be like, shit, I forgot.
But maybe we'll do an all Australian band jams of the week this coming week. I think
I think that'd be cool. That.
So to close out, we're gonna ask you a fun question. One that has nothing to do with Caligula's horse and everything to do with just music in general. One thing that we do every year is an album of the year list, where we basically, you know, put our brains together and just come up with what were our favorite releases in the year 2023. That's this year. So my question to you is, do you have, you know, any albums that are standing out to you as an album of the year 2023?
Okay. So I'm going to cheat the system is what I'm going to do.
I like it.
Because there are two EPs. That has stood out to me, and I'm gonna put them as like an omnibus. This is like we're gonna have a little collection of. All right, so my favorite album of the year is a connection between Exploring Bird Songs, Dancing in the Face of Danger, which is fucking wonderful. What a band! No one does it like them, and Lindsay Ward's voice is one of a kind. It's like a one in a generation voice. There is a je ne sais quoi. There's like a passion in her sound that makes it sound like everything she's singing is vitally important and you have to listen really intently. It's like there's just a magnetism to her voice that I love. I think it's incredible. The songwriting is fucking awesome. The lyrics are great. The vibes are just, it's fucking excellent. So you should absolutely go and listen to Dancing in the Face of Danger by Exploring Birdsong, and indeed everything else that they have touched with their amazing hands. The other one is a band that we met in Italy on tour. And we were playing this lineup, which was incredible, actually. It was just like there was one local progressive band, I forgot their name, and then there was a band from India called Project Mishram, who actually, you know what, let's just drop that in there. This isn't a new release, but you guys also have to go check out Project Mishram, because it's like fucking techie, proggy, weird shit, and then the dude in front is like barefoot, wearing like traditional garb, singing in like full-on Indian style stuff that, like, I don't know the terms for it. It's fucking amazing. And the that's dude cool. is a real talent too. Like, it's one of those things you hear and you go like, oh, that's right, I can't actually sing. So you're like, Project Mishram is fucking awesome, check that out. But that's, they didn't release anything this year, so that's not, doesn't count. Fucking shut. And so the other half of this favorite is the EP from Asymmetric Universe, who were the other support that night from Italy. We were playing in Milan, and they are an instrumental trio, and the minute that they started, I heard from the through the green room wall, I was like, ek fucking excuse me, for the second time that night, because the same thing happened with Project Mishram earlier, and I'm like, I was just gonna go sit down and have a banana, but fucking righto. So I had to pop back out. And it was, like, you'll hear it. The EP is called The Sun Would Disappear As I Imagined All the Stars. And you'll hear it, because it you feel like you're going insane within the first, you know, kind of minute of it. It's really kind of like, I'm going to say jazzy. I really hate that term, but it does have a jazzy kind of fusion-y tone to it. But it is frenetic and technical and exciting to listen to. And then watching it live was something else because it was played to perfection, like actual perfection. It was one of those like jaw drop moments of watching a live band. So yeah, Asymmetric Universe and Exploring Birdsong.
I'm really excited to check out these bands because I've not heard of many of the ones that you listed. So this is gonna be a nice
afternoon
for me. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty pumped.
It's like it comes 2 days from now. It's like Jim has shit taste in music.
that'll be a special episode just to talk about how awful. we want to apologize for.
Yeah, we have a full redacted like fucking apology episode. I'm down. I don't care. It's fine.
Oh man. Well, thank you so much for those recommendations. I'm super pumped to look at all. I have so many, like, I've been trying to write with my left hand too. I'm not left-handed, but I'm just like, oh shit. I can't wait. I love discovering new music. That's one of my favorite. That's honestly one of the reasons why we started this podcast. I mean, we're just two guys that like music and we didn't know how, you know, if it would catch on at all. And we figured worst case scenario, maybe we'll get some like music tips out of this. And
It's weird. It's a podcast that we put out into the world, but it's mostly we put it out so that hopefully people will comment back and give us suggestions.
Yeah, please. Yeah, I have a little community on Discord as well because I stream on Twitch sometimes. And in that community, it's really funny kind of having that interaction with people that are A, younger, and B, more in tune with what's going on with music right now. Because, you know, I don't listen to enough music. I wish I did. I should. But they're out there just listening to just fucking volumes of music and digging through and trying to find obscure small artists that are just kick ass. And like, so they'll just recommend all this shit. And I'm just finding cool stuff just because the people in this Discord are just better at it than me.
Yeah. And it's cool when people come to you because like they're coming to your Twitch stream. So they obviously like have an interest, or I would assume most of them have an interest in your music. And then, and then like recommend songs that they feel like you would like based off of the music that you create. It's like, well, man, I've got these people curating music for me and
it's better than the Spotify algorithm. They like actually know me, so it's nice.
That's what we love too, is like we're just getting messages on Instagram or whatever. It's just like, hey, love your podcast, check this band out, we think you'll like them. It's like, shit. Fuck, free recommendations.
Absolutely.
I love it.
Dude, I'll like it any day of the week.
But I mean, and is there anything else that you'd like to talk about, mention, cover, announce, anything like that regarding anything you guys got coming up? Obviously, we talked about the tour. We talked about the record. Or anything else you want to expound on before we sort of wrap things up here?
Yeah, well, I mean, okay, so Charcoal Grace out January 26th, but we're not done releasing singles yet. So keep your ear to the ground and your eye to the screen. Touch grass periodically, but just in the meantime, wait and see. We got more stuff coming soon.
I can't wait. Any more videos with that stuff? Or
yes,
yeah,
awesome,
awesome. We can't wait. So yeah, like Jim said, Charcoal Grace dropping January 26th, 2024. Tour with Earthside starting January 31st in North America, kicking off in DC. Jim, thank you so much for your time, man. We really appreciate you, and good luck with the release and the tour, and we look forward to seeing you in Pittsburgh.
Hey, no worries. Thanks for having me, guys. Had a great time.
We'll see you.